Hey guys, I am so excited for Ethos Training Systems to be the official sponsor for my podcast, Getting Zen with Gen Z. They are located at 314 West Institute Place, Chicago, and are Chicago's first sustainable strength, conditioning, and mobility group training facility. Their three main focuses are fat loss and conditioning, strength development, and injury prevention and mobility. Be sure to sign up for their new client promo at ethostrainingshy.com and make them your number one for all your training needs. Follow them on Instagram at Ethos Training Shy for awesome tips and updates. Getting Zen with Gen Z. Empowering, motivating, and inspiring you to live your happiest, healthiest life. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Getting Zen with Gen Z. I am really excited for today's guest, as I always say that actually about every week's guest, but I feel very fortunate that I have all these amazing people that I've met and connected with, and this guest is definitely one of them. We are having actually this interview over the phone. My new good friend, which I would love to say, Jasmine Bienvenu, and I hope I got that perfectly right. I met Jasmine actually at my good friend Sophia McDermott, who I've done a podcast episode with her several episodes back, almost probably at towards the beginning of the podcast, talking about nutrition and fitness and jujitsu. But I recently had the pleasure of meeting Jasmine at Sophia's Lifestyle Camp in Florida, where I was offering spa services, and we were able to get taught by Jasmine some amazing beach yoga. And Jasmine is also a brown belt jujitsu athlete. And we are both sponsored by Fuji Sports and the Athlete Sports Bag. I just have to put that out there, that sponsorship. But I just completely connected with Jasmine. It was almost instantly. And we had a lot of things to talk about, which we're going to focus on in a little bit. But I just want to welcome you and thank you for taking the time to be on my podcast today.
Thank you for having me. It's an absolute pleasure and honor, of course.
Oh, well, I just like fell in love with you instantly. And having yoga with you on the beach every morning at like 7:30 in the morning was pretty awesome to wake up to. And it was just so inspiring. And you have such an amazing just energy, just so kind and genuine. And, as we were talking and I was sharing, you know, my podcast information with you, you had asked if I have ever had a podcast talking about body image. And, I really hadn't. And I think it's something that's very important to talk about and address. And you were very gracious to say that you would open up and talk about your story. But before we get into that, I want to know how you started training jujitsu.
What a question. it was about 7.5 years ago, maybe longer. I was 19 years old and I had just started going to college in Tampa. And I was working part-time at this gym that had an MMA gym in the back, like a boxing ring and all that fun stuff. Mm-hmm. And then in the very, very back, there was apparently an MMA gym. Not that I knew about what was happening at the time, but I was going through, I can't even call it like a midlife crisis, because it was really just me breaking up with my high school sweetheart, but my like first love. So I was like, I need to let out my frustrations somehow, you know? And I used to be a dancer in high school, so I was thinking about going back to dance. But then there was this girl who's still a good friend of mine, Sam, and she was like, she worked at the MMA gym, and she's like, oh, you should come try jujitsu. I had no clue what it was. The amount of like MMA that I had done was boxing for fitness, mm-hmm. whatever that's worth.
Which is a little different, but you know.
Exactly. I had no clue what I was getting into, but I went to a beginner's class the week of Thanksgiving and fell in love with it. And I was like, I'm going to keep doing this. And next thing you know, here I am, you know, a brown belt in jiu-jitsu 7.5 years later. And, you know, jiu-jitsu has been such a big part of my life since that day.
That is incredible. And you've just come off a few recent tournaments where, you know, not to brag or anything, but, you know, you took some gold hardware home. So I think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I did the Miami Open 2 weeks ago, and then a week later I did the Denver Open and got gold at Miami and three golds and a silver in Denver.
I mean, look at you. What a rock star.
Not a bad day's work.
Not a bad day's work.
I don't know about a rock star, but it's definitely, I definitely treated myself to tons of chocolate after those tournaments.
I mean, I think that you're allowed to do that. I mean, come on, chocolate's pretty amazing, but you definitely earned it for sure. And I mean, we know how hard it is. Like sometimes there's good days and bad days and the struggle and, you know, just getting into that mindset of competing can just be so difficult and different just daily than daily training and being able to kind of perform your best that you know you're capable of. So, you know, when you have a good day like that, that's definitely something to celebrate. So congrats.
Thank you so much.
And I should say that you do currently live in Miami, right?
I do for another 2 weeks. And then I'm moving out to Denver, Colorado.
That is awesome. What brings you out there?
Just the mountains and Colorado living and just all those things. I work out of an agency based in Denver. So I'll be, instead of working remote like I am right now, I'll work out of the office there. So it's a couple of things, but just mostly being out, being able to go out into nature that easily. Denver is such a perfect city for a little bit of metropolitan life, but then half an hour outside the city, you can be in the mountains and be in the quiet and with nature. And that's a really important thing for me to have in my life, to find balance.
That's amazing. It sounds incredible. I love it. My uncle lives in Colorado and I've probably been there once. That's horrible to say. And he's lived there like all my life. I know. I definitely need to plan another trip and then I can come and see you too.
Exactly.
Awesome. So along this journey, were you very into yoga before you started jiu-jitsu, or did you find it after, or, you know, while you were training?
It was actually while I was training. I'll kind of elaborate more into like my story, but at a later time. But it was recommended to me probably when I was a blue belt that I should take up meditation. And that eventually transformed into taking some yoga. And I, like most jiu-jitsu athletes, just do yoga to stretch. Mm-hmm. We need it so badly.
For sure.
And I just started going once a week. And I was meditating at home, but I was going to and practicing asana, or the postures that you typically know in yoga. And I just go on once a week to this amazing instructor, but it wasn't until probably like 6 months in that I dropped into that state of meditation at the end of class that everybody talks about, where you just go to space, essentially. And I came out of it and I was yoga high, like not even a joke. No substances like included. Just I came out of this meditation like feeling so like blissful and euphoric. And I was like, oh, this is the Kool-Aid that everybody talks about in yoga. Like, this is the part that people love about it.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I started going more. And then I had a friend who was a yoga teacher trainer who also trained jiu-jitsu. And she looked at me and she's like, you're going to be one of my students for yoga teacher training one day. And she was right.
Oh, that's amazing.
And that was about, oh gosh, like 3 or 4 years ago in hell.
Wow, that's awesome. I mean, I feel like jiu-jitsu and yoga just complement each other so well. And, you know, it is an amazing thing for jiu-jitsu practitioners to utilize, I think, just in, you know, helping with mobility and balance and core strength and, you know, the flexibility, just all of that is, you know, something that's very complementary, I think, to what we do in our training. So that's pretty incredible. But when you talk about that yoga high, that's like how I feel when I'm doing, like after I do a Reiki session, just utilizing that energy and kind of getting into that space when I'm working with someone. And it's like, you're in that like meditation and you're kind of in that zone. And it's this just like energetic, like just energy that comes over you afterwards, and it's pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. So it's, I totally understand that feeling. And I mean, that's awesome. That's awesome to be able to share and teach to others.
Yeah. I think that yoga is the best complement to jujitsu. I like to think, it's like the yin and the yang, mm-hmm. you know, in jujitsu, we're trying to be the aggressor. We're trying to kind of protect ourselves. It's a very like outward, I don't know what the word I want to use is. It's like an outward effort to be, to do jujitsu. You have to think about what your opponent's doing and what you're doing, what the next steps are. Like it's very, you know, you have to act a lot. And then in yoga, it's the opportunity for you to turn inward and check in with yourself. More than just stretching, yoga, you can see in your body where your issues are, where you need to take a little bit more care. It allows you to connect with your breath and just relax your mind, especially when we're always like hyper speed in jujitsu. So it's like the opposite of that. And having that equal balance of the two makes you, your jujitsu slow down as well, and you mm-hmm. can make better decisions and not react on feelings or ego. There's so many directions that are so many ways that yoga can affect your jiu-jitsu in a positive way, and then also in your mind and in your body as well.
I love that. That's just beautifully said, and you're right. I mean, it does just, I think it is very complimentary and helps your jujitsu evolve. And even, you know, we know we need to focus on that breath and be a little bit more calm and controlled so that we can kind of know what that next step would be. And I think yoga mm-hmm. can definitely help with that big time for sure. Mm-hmm. So I kind of want to get to our conversation about, you know, when we were in Florida together, we had a moment where you were able to kind of touch on the journey you went through, but we didn't really get to, you know, go into it deeper, which I'm kind of glad for, because I want to hear this for the first time as well as kind of everybody else. And I'm just thanking you again for being vulnerable and kind of sharing your story, because I think it's so important for other people to listen to and relate to and learn from, and kind of, you know, have that support as well. But take us through your journey, you know, dealing with yourself and body image and any struggles that you kind of had in that area.
Mm-hmm. So, my issues with body image and food and exercise and just self-love in general, manifested with jiu-jitsu. I would love to say that jiu-jitsu has just been this great impact on my life and it's only brought me happiness, but my struggles and jiu-jitsu are very closely intertwined. Mm-hmm. And it took me a very long time to separate jiu-jitsu from the dark parts, the demons that I've dealt with over the past like 7 years. So when I was a white belt, I was training up in Tampa, and you know, when I started jiu-jitsu and even into high school, when I was in high school, I was never a skinny person. I was never an overweight person. I was always kind of in the middle, and I used the word like mediocre. Like I wasn't noticed for one thing or another until I spoke, because I'm originally from England, so my accent would be what got me attention. No one would notice me unless I spoke. Mm-hmm. And once I started jiu-jitsu, obviously when everybody starts jiu-jitsu, they drop a ton of weight because it's just so much on the body that we just shed weight in general.
Absolutely.
So when I started to drop some weight, I started to get more attention. And I think the timing was a little bit perfect because, you know, I was breaking up with my high school sweetheart and then I was seeking attention outwards because I was trying to fill a hole and I was losing weight. So I was getting attention from men. And like I never had before. I was like, oh, so this is how I get love, is if I lose weight and I get prettier and more perfect looking. Mm-hmm. That was my rationale.
Yes.
I was 19. I mean, now I look about it, I'm like, that sounds stupid, but
well,
that was
no,
the reality.
but that's a very real thing that, you know, you lose weight and you start getting this attention and that's how mm-hmm. you feel, you know, in turn. And you think, okay, this is what I need to do. And this is what makes me beautiful. you know, yeah, and perfect.
Or worthy of being loved.
In that, yes, exactly, that exactly.
Yeah. So I started to lose weight, and I started a relationship that was very toxic for me. And I was working at this gym, and though I don't think it was intentional of my coach, my professor, my boss, my mentor to be emotionally abusive, he was. So these two things were happening. At the same time as me, like, losing weight, I was in this relationship and it was very toxic, and I was getting emotionally abused by my boss and my mentor. So there was these two things happening that were out of my control, that I started to use food and exercise and losing weight as my means to control my life. Since I mm-hmm. couldn't control them, I wanted to control other things. And I started to lose weight, more weight, and then I ended up maybe training 3 hours a day. I was intaking not even 1,000 calories.
Oh my gosh. You know,
I was insane. And mm-hmm. I wanted to make this goal weight so bad of 125. Mm-hmm. I don't walk around at that anymore, but I really wanted to. But the reality of it is that I was essentially anorexic. I didn't know at the time that I was anorexic when I was in the middle of all this, when I made that weight. But I did make it with eating lemon on my salad and, you know, drinking protein shakes for breakfast and training 3 or 4 hours a day. Yeah, I did it, but at the cost of my health for quite a bit of time.
Wow.
And it wasn't until I made that weight, and then I tried to go to Disney. I didn't go to Disney. I went to Universal Studios, Harry mm-hmm. Potter World, and I tried to eat normal again. And I tried to eat this chocolate fudge, and I immediately felt like this overwhelming guilt, like, for eating it. And I was like, I'm gonna gain all this weight back, you know. And I was just in my head, like, as I was trying to eat normal, like, I was having this war within my brain, like, about, you're gonna get fat again, no one's gonna love you if you gain weight, like, you need to get this out of you, essentially. And that's when I became bulimic.
My gosh.
So I tried for months to eat normal, and I would go through the cycle of like whatever I'm just going to eat, binge, purge, restrict, just a cycle over and over and over again. And it wasn't until my mother had caught me trying to purge that she made me go to therapy. And I kind of got told that I was anorexic and bulimic.
Wow.
And for a very long time, I thought that was my identity. And I mean, the period of my recovery from when I kind of, sorry, there's a...
Oh, that's okay. That? Yeah, we can continue on. No problem. That's what happens when we do this over, you know, the phone.
I'm in a neighborhood and they're driving through. Oh my gosh, it happens all the time, actually. But the period of my recovery is pretty long. But when I finally got told that I was anorexic and bulimic, my whole world was collapsing upon me. You know, the guy that I was talking about, our relationship kind of ended. My boss, my mentor, my coach at my gym essentially fired me and kicked me out of the gym because I was in this war with myself. I don't think I was navigating the world very well, and I was acting out, and I was resenting them for what they did to me and kind of blaming them, that I just kind of, my whole world imploded. So I lost quite a bit and I hit rock bottom.
And so how long, if I just interrupt you real quick, how long was the period of time that you ended up doing this? Like, where you were binging and then purging, and how long did that kind of last before you found out that that's what you were kind of diagnosed with?
It was probably about 4 or 5 months.
Okay.
But, wow. Even in my recovery, I acted out in my eating disorder. So, like, it didn't stop once I got diagnosed. I, you know, went to therapy and I started to understand the mechanics of what I was doing. But it wasn't really until I went to OA, Ovaries Anonymous, that I kind of understood why I was doing what I was doing. And I think OA is really what saved my life, because I was still, when I was in therapy, I knew what was happening, but I didn't know how to stop it. And I didn't know my motivations behind it. And I was in OA for a year, and I, you know, went through the 12 steps, and I really started to understand why I was acting out and what, you know, what was missing. But I, when I did OA, I understood and I made amends. I did all the 12 steps, but I was prescribed by the program and by a nutritionist a diet, you know, to make sure I ate enough food. And it was, I had to weigh and measure my food. It was mad awkward at restaurants, pulling out a cup and a scale. But for a very, for like at least a year, I had to like force myself to eat enough food.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told in OA that body image was the last thing that really comes back. You know, that self-love and that acceptance is like the last thing. Once you've worked through all the other garbage, you finally start to work on that self-love piece and the body image piece that I think probably fueled a lot of my eating disorder. And I didn't actually get to that point until last year. So we're talking like 4 years of work before I even brought my attention to body image and that sort of stuff.
Well, I can imagine that being such, I mean, the way you describe it, and this is the thing, it is, this is a very real disease. And just like anything else where people can use, you know, drugs or alcohol or, you know, anything, food can be mm-hmm. that substance that people mm-hmm. abuse or use for that comfort to make themselves feel better. Or we always know there's some kind of underlying issue or emotion that's going on. And I think, you know, it can take one attempt. It can take five attempts. You know, it's something that is probably a continuing daily struggle. And then you're right. It's like, well, what do? You realize that this is what's going on, but now you have to deal with the emotional piece to it and why mm-hmm. it's happening. So I can imagine how that has to be such, I mean, that had to be such a journey for you.
Yeah. I mean, everyone has a vice. And some are stronger than others. And, you know, I like to say that food and exercise was my drug of choice. That was what I used to make myself feel good or not feel at all. Because my emotions and, like, all that my surrounding situation was just affecting me so much, I felt out of control. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to diet, and I'm going to exercise, and I'm going to train hard, and I'm going to compete, and I'm going to put all these expectations on myself so I can focus on that and ignore all of my other issues.
Mm-hmm.
But with doing that, maybe I'll become skinny and beautiful, and I'll be worthy of being loved, because that's what people were, why people were paying attention to me before.
Right.
This is my rationale. And like just fighting that imprinted like thought process in my brain and trying to rewire that has been the work of the past like five years.
Oh my gosh. That's incredible. Like just to, you know, I mean, that's just so many emotions, and to really kind of step back and look at that and rewire that thinking. I mean, that's a lot of work. And at the same time, you're still, you know, how to separate that jujitsu and that, you know, exercise and fitness, you're so into that world. And that's such something mm-hmm. that you are so passionate about. And, you know, so I'm curious too, were you still competing during that time when you were struggling with bulimia and anorexia?
Yes and no.
Cause I'm like, how did you feel, like physically feel? Cause, you know, making weight, you probably had an answer for, essentially, but mm-hmm. how did you physically feel when you were on the mats competing?
Well, when I was deep in my eating disorder, it was my first tournament as a white belt, and I lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't even remember what happened or how I felt, but what I do know is that I tried to compete over and over again throughout my jiu-jitsu career, and in my recovery. And every time I would compete, I would take like 10 steps back, and my disordered eating habits would come to fruition, and I would have become the worst version of myself again. My poor boyfriend's been through the ringer as far as like me cutting weight and trying to make, because I'm right on the brink of lightweight and middleweight. So essentially the weight that I need to lose is like 5 pounds to make it into the lower weight bracket. Right. And I would try and make that weight bracket, and I would have to diet and run and train and be obsessive and weigh myself every day. And I found after like just being burned over the years that was, I couldn't do it. I can't cut weight anymore.
I was going to say that's got to just restart the whole cycle.
Exactly. So I actually, after October, not last year, but the year before, 2017, mm-hmm. I competed in the Miami Open, and I dieted and trained, and I made weight, but I was still a crazy person. And I wasn't, the problem is with cutting weight is that in general, and making like these weight classes for tournaments, is that you are so focused on making the weight that you are not focused on your playing your best game or addressing the mental aspect of competing, which is half the battle in the first place.
1,000%.
Let alone energy and strength.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized like I made the weight, but my head wasn't in the game to compete. And right. I decided I would take a year off. And I didn't compete until 2 or 3 weeks ago in Miami. And, gosh, this past year, I don't know about you, but 2018 was rough mm-hmm. in general. So I feel like I've heard this from a lot of people that 2018 was hard. But, you know, when I didn't have a tournament to focus on or to cut weight for, all of the emotional garbage that was hanging out in the back burner came to the front. Because I didn't have anything to focus my attention on.
You couldn't avoid it anymore.
Right. And this was event, and I couldn't, and I had some other health concerns that made it so I couldn't train. So I was literally just sitting with these emotions in the pain for the better part of 2018. And that's when it was about, you know, rekindling my relationship with food, with my body, and with all this, the emotions that come with those two things. And that was my entire 2018. Granted, I got through that time, and I didn't cut weight for these past two tournaments. I just ate well and lifted and took care of myself and slept enough. And I came out on top. So,
That's amazing. I was going to ask you, I was going to say, did you go down to light or did you stay at middle?
No.
What did you do?
I kept my happy ass in middle, and I ate my chocolate. Maybe a little more asparagus than usual, but still, like, you know.
But that goes to show, I mean, you know, and in general, like, you know, I usually fight it heavy, and I've gone down to medium heavy, and, you know, I eat really clean already, and I know kind of, mm-hmm. you know, how my body feels and where it likes to be, and I like to lift, and I want to feel, you know, strong.
Mm-hmm.
But I see so many people, and, you know, I think it's different, when you're cutting weight or, you know, you're trying to trim down a little bit over a period of time in a very healthy manner. But, you mm-hmm. know, there's people who will try and cut that weight in a week or a few days before, and they're completely depleted. And it's like, I just need to get to this number on the scale because I need to be able to compete at this weight class. And, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of people may not know this, but, you know, we know at, you know, IBJJF tournaments, you literally get on the scale and walk out and compete. So it's not mm-hmm. like you have time to really replenish or, you know, get any fuel before you're going out to fight. So, you know, I think it's like, well, what's the point of that? Like, what are you doing and why are you doing it aren't you supposed to bring your mentally, like your mental and physical strongest self to those mats to compete instead of mm-hmm. a, you know, drained version of yourself with no energy and so stressed and depleted of all your fuel and nutrients, you know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I feel like that was always hard to, you know, understand. And I know, you know, people obviously have different reasons of why they're going to cut or not, but, you know, like you just kind of proved that theory of you ate, you know, how you eat, your best self. You were giving yourself all the nutrients you need. You were training, you were resting, and you didn't worry about the weight, and you went out there and you performed your best.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, maybe mine is the worst case scenario, but I think there is a direct correlation to cutting weight and your body rebelling in some shape or form. Mm-hmm. I've had some friends that have had seizure disorders from cutting weight, friends that are always injured for some reason, probably because their bones are brittle, because they're not getting enough nutrients.
Yes.
For me in particular, I got two hormone disorders from not feeding my body enough food and overtraining.
Wow.
And I've been trying to fix that for the better part of like 3 or 4 years. And that's like 3 or 4 years of making sure I eat enough, sleep enough, my stress is on point, I don't overtrain, and taking, like, dedicating and committing to that. And granted, I every single time I cut weight, my body rejects or rebels in some way. I feel it, whether it's in like energy levels or old injuries or in my hormone disorder. So at what cost? You're mm-hmm. cutting 10 pounds to make a weight class, but now your body's going to tell you something. It's going to say no to something else, and it's going to reject you. You're going to get an injury that wasn't planned, and you can't even train at all. Or you're like me, and you have hormone disorders, and you can't manage your weight, or, you know, you have issues with the menstrual cycle. Like, there's always something. There's a price to pay with cutting that much weight.
You're absolutely right. And that's, you know, I think that's something that, I mean, we've heard about it in like sports kind of, you know, over the years too. And it's just, mm-hmm. it's what's that price to pay? Like, you can get, when you're cutting and you get to such a dangerously low weight, and then, you know, when it's a pattern that happens all the time, and then all of a sudden, okay, then there's this eating disorder that can happen and come with it also, and you get to such mm-hmm. a low weight, there's going to be so many other health issues that happen, and it's serious. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think people just think, oh, I can cut weight, you know, it'll be fine. But over time, and depending on how much you're cutting, it's like that can really cause to a lot of health issues.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's even exclusive to jiu-jitsu or MMA in general. I mean, granted, it's a little bit more prominent because of the weight classes and competing. But even in everyday life, I believe a lot more people have disordered eating habits than they like let up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think there's a lot of people that are, you know, almost in denial. And I want to say this too, and this is not just, you know, focused on females. This is males too.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I wanted to kind of get your perspective and your take on this as going through this. And I don't know how much this really, you know, affected you in part of, you know, your journey, but I just feel like, you know, so with having like social media nowadays too, and there's just this society with certain expectations and standards, I feel like this is mm-hmm. something that a lot of people struggle with, that they don't, you know, I think people are more open about talking, you know, talking about it, but I still feel like it's something that people kind of suffer in silence.
Yeah. I'm a poster child for the comparison tactic.
Oh yes,
I think a lot of people are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't even think we mean to do it, but you'll scroll mindlessly through Instagram and you'll see, you know, one of your, you know, fellow blue belts or fellow purple belts, and you'll be like, man, they look so skinny and fit and tiny. Like, why am I not like that? Like, I want arms like that. I want an ass like that. Like, why is my belly still here? I train as much as they do. Like, just that conversation that is literally going on constantly inside your head as you're scrolling through Instagram, and you don't even realize it. I mean, I can speak to that. Like, I have to think about that conversation and making sure I tell myself to shush, because it'll just happen on the back burner, like, and I'll glaze over and I'll just hear it all the time. And it just becomes a habit
mm-hmm.
to compare myself to everybody on Instagram. And, you know, constantly seeing everybody, like, the grind of like training and dieting. And then you see get slim tactics and all these things. And then this gets validated by how many followers they have. Like, oh, they're skinny and pretty, I guess, and they have 12K followers. I guess that's what I need to be, look like to get that much love coming my direction, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just, definitely.
Oh my gosh. I actually have to unfollow some people because I compared myself to them so much. Not that I didn't like them as a person, but for me and my demons, I have to unfollow them because I would compare myself and I would just send myself into a spiral.
But that's amazing. I mean, that you're able to, you know, be so aware and recognize that. And it's like, you don't want to go back into that cycle and start, you know, comparing. I was telling one of my clients this the other day, one of my personal training clients, and, you know, she's progressed so much and she is so healthy. She has so much more energy. She's sleeping better, you know, less stress, all these amazing things that, you know, we want and should be looking at and paying attention to. But, you know, the number on the scale or just the way, you know, she might feel about her tummy and, you know, looking at other people, it's like, well, I don't have this six pack or this person is like this. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know what? It's like, stop. And not to say that I never do this, but it's like, we have to stop, you know, focusing on what other people, you know, what we don't have and what we do, and not comparing ourselves to others all the time. But it's like, listen, we might not have this, but we're amazing at this, or I have this, you know, mm-hmm. being just proud of what we've accomplished and what we've done and how we're feeling. And, you know, that even goes with the number on the scale. I think so many times people look at that, and women in general too, with our hormones, that can fluctuate so much. And it's like, let's mm-hmm. pay attention to how we're feeling, you know, what our energy levels are at. If we feel strong, you know, mm-hmm. how we're doing it just with our, you know, rest and how we feel like our progress is on the mats or whatever sport we're doing or in life. But, you know, mm-hmm. and just even like the mental quality, because when you start becoming so depleted too, I think the cognitive functions, like that's really hard to have that mental focus as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's like, if we kind of look at, what are we doing right? Like that positive self-talk, like what do we have that we love when we catch ourselves in those moments? I think that's a good thing to kind of spin around and think about.
Yeah. Last year when I was going through all my emotional garbage, I had a tag team of an amazing therapist and a nutritionist who specialized in eating disorders, and they kind of worked together. But my nutritionist made me do the most outlandish things. She's the most unconventional nutritionist ever. She did not focus on diet, but like on my relationship with my body and food.
Mm-hmm.
And she was funny. She was like, I'm not asking you to tell yourself you're beautiful and look in the mirror and say that. Like, that's not what I'm asking you to do. But she wanted me to turn inward and express gratitude for what my body can do. Aside from having the privilege to take another breath, that's a huge thing.
But absolutely.
Like, I can move. I can dance. I can do jujitsu. I can climb buildings. Not really. I can climb walls, maybe. But it's like just focusing on these things like that we can do with our bodies right now, and less about like the aesthetic part of it. Like, we can walk and do all the things we want to do, and focusing on that part of our body rather than how our arms look, how our stomach looks. Mm-hmm.
Well, those are so important. It's like, how does, you know, we want our body to function, right? So mm-hmm. being grateful that it's functioning properly and we're able to do the things we love to do is always going to, I don't want to say be more important than, you know, aesthetically how we look, but that is, it is very important. That's how we can achieve our daily goals that we want. And, you know, mm-hmm. I think that's part of, you know, definitely loving yourself is a big journey. And sometimes we can't just look in the mirror and be like, yes, you know, I love myself. Like, that just sounds too corny or not real in that moment, you know, but it's like, yeah, I'm grateful that I can get up and walk today, you know, like mm-hmm. simple things like that. Cause if our body's not functioning properly and we're depleting it, that's probably not going to be able to happen.
Mm-hmm. And even after all this work that I've done, like, I still don't look in the mirror and be like, I love me. I don't mm-hmm. do that. I'm kind of at this point where I'm like, I'm all right. You know, not too bad. Like, that's where I'm at right now. Where it's a work in progress.
Right. But that's, I mean, that's just so real and authentic. and it's okay. That's where you are. And you're aware of how you feel. And, you know, I think knowing how far you've come has just evolved who you are today, you know, and being able to kind of, and share that insight to other people, like, you're just such a true inspiration for that, you know?
Mm. Thank you. It's even that, like, hearing that from somebody is hard to believe, because for a very long time, I just hated myself for the way I acted, especially when I was in my eating disorder, and berating myself for not being good enough, not achieving enough, just not being enough in general for anything or anyone. And I realized when I was in that mental space, I wasn't even presenting the best version of myself to people that could be an inspiration, could achieve anything she wanted, you know? Mm-hmm. And the shift in perspective is very new for me. And like, even hearing that from you is slightly uncomfortable, refreshing, mm-hmm. but uncomfortable.
Yeah. You know? Well, and that's the thing. I mean, it's, you know, it's always a process and not perfection. And I, you know, I think it's probably hard for you to hear, but, you know, you will and are making an impact by sharing your story, because there are so many people who I'm sure just live silently with this all the time, you know, and with their demons, and, you know, may not recognize it or may not be able to get help, or, you know, may think that they're struggling alone and can't relate to anybody. So just even sharing that story, you know, it's going to have an impact on one person. And I feel like if it's that one person, you know, you can help, it makes it all worth it.
Yeah.
What would you, no, go ahead. I don't want to interrupt you.
No. No, you're good.
What advice would you give to, you know, girls and guys out there just that are struggling and feel like that they're alone and they don't have support?
That they find the person that in your heart of hearts you trust the most and tell them about it. I understand how lonely it can be, like having this wall within your head and not telling anybody about it and just suffering. I've been there. I was there for a while. And I didn't feel freedom from it until I told somebody about it. And my people were people in OA, because they told their story and I would hear them and I'd be like, oh my gosh, I have the same mental like path. Like that's what I say, you know, like mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God, they know I'm not alone. And I mean, I was fortunate enough to fall into those meetings, but if that's not something that you can do, you can definitely just talk about it to somebody, because when you speak what you're thinking out loud,
right.
I mean, it's freeing. I remember I was in a meeting, and this is kind of shifting the question a little bit, but, you know, in our heads, we'll constantly tell each other, like, tell ourselves, oh, you need to lose more weight. You're never good enough. Like, just berating ourselves inside our heads, and then our eating disorder and our rational mind are, like, battling inside, and that's the conversation I'm talking about. And mm-hmm. this guy in this meeting was saying, like, imagine you had the person you love the most in this entire world, and you put them in a cage, close the door, and you started to verbally abuse them. You start to starve them and then force them to eat till sickness. You force them to exercise. Like you do all the things that you do to yourself, to your person that you love. You would never ever do that in reality to the person that you love. Right. So when you start talking about what's happening inside your head to a person, even if they're just listening, like you hear how absolutely preposterous your thoughts are right now, and making them outwardly speaking them will help you kind of take a step back and realize, oh shit, like I'm being, excuse my language, sorry.
that's okay.
I'm being really mean to myself and I need to stop and I need help navigating that.
Wow, that story, that's very real. And that's very, I mean, you would never think about doing something like that to somebody you love. Yet this is what you would do to yourself all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how we can treat ourselves. I feel like we can be our own worst enemies. And the way we talk to ourselves and feel about ourselves, we would never think about doing that to somebody we love. Mm-hmm. So why do we deserve that? You know?
Yeah. And it's granted, my experience was more extreme, but even in terms of just body image and wanting to lose weight, and just even the slightest thing, I just look super fat in that picture. Just that passive comment, it can start like a snowball effect. And next thing you know, you're in my position and you're not eating anything for dinner except a tablespoon of almond butter or something like that. And, after training 3 hours, like, what?
Right.
Because that's how it goes. It starts with those little thoughts. And if you can change or shift your thinking earlier, like, it makes it a little bit easier to climb out of that hole that you're going down.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But yeah, the deeper and deeper you go, but it could start with something as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just, I really truly thank you for opening up about all of this. 'Cause I know that this is something that you probably, are going to struggle with still every day. It's kind of a reality, but the fact that you have gotten, I don't want to say, I don't even know if that's the right word, but control of it, but you're aware and you know what you need to do for yourself. I mean, that's just, I think that's such a huge thing. And I'm sure, how does your thinking shift? Like, what's your day like in your mind, like your thought process?
Gosh, you want to know that? It's like chaos. Oh gosh. I still to this day sometimes have to navigate like the eating disorder rationale that's inside my head, just like looking at food and being like, that is like 300 calories, that's how many carbs, so if I eat that I can't eat this tonight, like that sort of language. And sometimes sprinkled in there is the, wow, your aunt's really fat in that photo. So, and just, I just have to say stop. Like, that's all I say to myself is just stop. And that is the best advice I ever got from anybody, my therapist in particular, just to say stop, like, to the negative thinking. I don't turn around and say, like, when I say, oh, my arms are fat, like, stop, you're beautiful. No, I don't do that. I just tell myself to stop right now, because that's most authentic thing I can give myself right now. If I said I was beautiful, I mean, some days, sometimes we have those days where we're like, I feel really good about myself today. I'm going to feed myself all the compliments, but that's not every day.
So right. Of course.
Me just telling myself to stop is the best thing I can do when those thoughts start to intrude.
Wow. You cut it. You just cut that right away. It's like if you heard somebody else saying that, you would say the same thing. So it's like, just nope, stop, done, move on, next
continue
thought.
On,
it's like,
exactly.
Don't even go there. Just continue your focus elsewhere.
Right. And I think we didn't really touch on it much, but meditation has been a huge help in my recovery and, navigating the thoughts that come up.
I'm sure yoga and meditation has had to have a huge impact.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Meditation more than yoga. Meditation opens up the opportunity for you to be with your thoughts for an extended period of time. When we're busy existing in the world, we are distracted by all of our surroundings and the next thing we have to do. But when you sit for 10 to 90 minutes, depending on your practice, you have to sit with your thoughts and you notice how easily you're distracted. You notice where your mind likes to comfortably navigate towards and what it likes to think about. And you just become an observer of your thoughts. And that helps you I really love your meditation for this, is that it really helps you navigate, you know, how to change those thoughts. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, when to kind of switch gears, and where, and you practice that in your meditation, just focusing and observing and not reacting to any of your thoughts. You know, if you think something, but you don't say it out loud, you know, things like that.
I absolutely love meditation. I'm a huge fan, and, you know, I practice it. I encourage my clients to practice, and, you know, I say too, even if you don't have 90 minutes, if you do have those 10 minutes, just being consistent with it. Cause I think it's, you know, just like exercising mm-hmm. your body, you exercise your mind, and you can get to that place a little bit faster. And just being still in the, you know, in our lives are just so filled with chaos, I think, and just, you know, distractions and rushing from this to that mm-hmm. and having that time with yourself to be still and with your thoughts. And, you know, I think that's just, it's amazing tool for yourself.
Yeah. I know that a lot of people shy away from meditation because they think, oh, like I can't change my thoughts. Like I'm always distracted. I try and sit there and I just go everywhere and I think about the toaster being left on and blah, blah, blah. But I think that's a misconception. I think Andy Pettycomb, who's the co-founder of Headspace, I don't know if you're aware of that program.
No, Headspace. I don't think so. No.
It's amazing. It's a meditation app that you can subscribe to.
Uh-huh.
And it has different meditations based on what your needs are. Has some amazing things like one on anxiety or mindful eating.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
awesome.
I've been through that
yeah.
one. there's one on competition performance as well, which is pretty cool that I've gone through a couple of times. But mm-hmm. he explains meditation in this way. He's like, I want you to imagine that you are sitting on a bench and you're at the edge of a street and you're watching the cars go by. And each car is a thought or feeling. And meditation is the practice of just sitting there and observing your thoughts and feelings passed by.
Oh, I absolutely love that.
Yeah. Occasionally, we start chasing after a thought or a feeling, i.e. a car,
mm-hmm.
and the practice is coming back to that seat and watching the observing again. But all the time, even to this day for me, I will chase after a car, and then I'll have to bring myself back to the seat. And that's the practice of meditation. It's not changing the thoughts, it's observing them.
Wow, that's pretty powerful. That's a great analogy. I really, really like that. I mean, mm-hmm. I feel like that's just a really good way to describe it for people to understand that, yeah, you're not trying to go in and actively change anything or, you know, completely clear your mind. We know that that's something that's difficult and almost impossible to do. But mm-hmm. I like that as just kind of being an observer and sitting back and taking that time to just, you know, watch those thoughts go by.
Yeah. And by proxy, you start to react and think differently by this practice.
Mm-hmm.
On some other level, your thoughts start to change unintentionally just by becoming an observer.
Wow. And that's kind of the sense of, you know, I always talk about detachment too with my clients. And I think that's kind of how you achieve that and get there too.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Wow. Oh, well, that's, I mean, thank you. I'm like, just this story. I'm speechless. I'm like, this doesn't happen often. No, I really hope you know how much I appreciate you sharing all of this and your journey. And, you know, I just think you're absolutely amazing. So just know that. And do you have any, are you going to compete again in the near future?
You might no. find me at the Las Vegas Open in August.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. When everybody's doing World Masters, might as well. It's already be in Las Vegas anyway.
Yes.
So that's probably could be my next endeavor. I'm going to enjoy my summer for the time being.
I love that. You know what? I'm debating if I'm doing Masters Worlds, but this is the first year. It's been a year in June that I have not competed, and I was just kind of on that grind and that cycle doing all the big tournaments and, you know, so many other awesome things are going on in life that I just kind of had to step back. And, you know, teaching is one of those priorities now that I love. And
mm-hmm.
I just, you know, it was like recognizing when you need a break. It's, you know, I want competition to be fun and I want to enjoy it and not have it be something that's stressful is just one more thing to do. Cause we know you, mm-hmm. you want to be in that mental space, you know, you have to be in that mental space, you know, to go out there and do it. But, yeah, I don't know. I might see you out at Masters Worlds. We'll see.
Do it. It'll be fun.
I know. I do. I love it. It's one of my favorite tournaments. Fun. Yes. Yes, exactly. But it's how we utilize, you know, it's like you say that too, you're enjoying your summer and training. Like we all, you know, I think the important thing is we utilize, you know, jujitsu. We have this amazing passion and we can utilize it for what we need it for at that moment,
mm-hmm.
which I think is pretty
exactly.
awesome.
You know? Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think that if competing takes away your joy from jujitsu, then maybe competing's not for you. You know, that's what I think about. If it stops being fun.
Definitely. You know, absolutely.
Then do it.
And that's, you know, that's where I say it's like, you know, people always ask me, oh, are you competing? Are you competing? And it's like, I want to be excited to compete again. You know, when I'm at that mm-hmm. place, when I can really put my focus to it and I'm excited and I'm missing it and I really want to get out there. And it's like, I'm getting the itch. So it's like, you know, that's what's happening. But until then, it's like, you know, right now it's like, especially coaching my girls at the Chicago Open a few weeks mm-hmm. ago and, you know, just being in that environment, like jujitsu is my love. It's my life and it's always going to be a part of me in some, you know, way, shape or form. But it's like, I want to really like get excited again to get back out there and do it. And when I am, I will, you know? So, but yeah, everybody, I think everybody can utilize it how they want. I never like to pressure anybody into competing. It's a great experience and you learn a lot about yourself, but you know, if it's something you want as a hobby or as just as a, you know, a love, like that's what it's there for. Jiu-jitsu is for you, however you, you know, want to utilize it.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for coming on today and taking the time.
My pleasure.
Where can people find you? I'm like, that's the most important question.
My Instagram is jazzjitsu, J-A-Z-Z, jitsu.
Awesome.
So that's why I'm pretty much the most active. Mm-hmm. You can find me at Sophia's Lifestyle Camps. I've been her yoga teacher for those for the better part of the past 4 years. Love doing it.
And you're amazing at it. You're such an amazing teacher. I love it. It was so much
thank
fun.
Thank you. Thank you. It's one of my biggest like passions in life, and I really love making people feel relaxed. So I appreciate that a lot.
Are you going to be teaching in Colorado?
Of course. So in 2 weeks, everybody can find me in Denver.
That is awesome. I love that.
And of course, on the tournament circuit, hopefully.
Oh, that's amazing. So you'll keep all those updates on the IG for sure.
Yeah, of course. Yep.
Well, thank you so much again. And I can't wait for us to connect in the future, of course. And I want to just remind everybody out there, any topics or guests that you want to hear, go ahead and send me a message on my Facebook page at Jen Z, or you can follow me on Instagram and send me a message over there at JZ Beauty and the Beast. I will see you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.